Well, Michael, exciting times coming to Medina over the next couple of years in a different couple of ways, both a course renovation of your number three championship course and the 2026 President's Cup. Michael, I'm going to start by, last year at a very exciting BMW championship, but there was some thoughts at the time, considering the numbers these great players were putting up, that the club might want to reevaluate course number three and see what they could do to toughen things up before another big championship came in. And it seems like your current president, Joe Gattone, wasted no time in pulling some people together from the club and starting to put together a plan to look forward at course number three. And tell us a little bit about that and how the club has moved forward in the direction they're going since the 2019 BMW Championship.
Yeah, you're right. The 2019 BMW, I mean, we look back at it, we're going to look back at it with a lot of fondness. You know, I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised. I was actually the president at the time at the club. I would have expected a bit more loud concern over the scoring that happened at the tournament from the members. But in fact, there really wasn't a lot of that. I mean, the overwhelming response from the members was really how great of experience the tournament was for them. They enjoyed, maybe smaller crowds than some of the other events we had. So it was, maybe a bit more accessible, to see some of the action. And we certainly got a very worthy champion. That said, certainly the way the course played caused the membership to consider what changes we might want to make to course three. But I got to be honest with you here. The story around revising or potentially revising course three goes beyond what happened at the BMW. You're absolutely correct. Joe Gattone and the board now did something that we've had a history of doing the past few years, which is mobilizing the next iteration of our strategic plan, which guides our investment and many activities at the club, programming and the like. So one of the key outcomes of that strategic plan was to take a look at course three and create what we call a master plan, which is really something that will determine the long range investments that we would consider doing on the course. And, certainly the BMW outcomes was one impetus, but we were also confronted with the reality that there was major infrastructure investment on course three that was already being contemplated. Things like a couple of drainage issues, looking at some of the bridges, new irrigation system. And it sort of came together to say, if we're going to be making these kinds of investments and potentially taking the course down for some period of time, or at least, certain holes, why don't we open it up and take a more holistic approach in looking at the course? And Rory, the other thing that, and I know you're aware of this, is our members have really embraced the idea of improving the assets that we have at the club. I mean, we have three courses, and, after the Ryder Cup, so say 13 and 14, did a redesign of course one with Tom Doak. More recently in 15-16, we did a restoration with Reese Jones on course two. So the members understand what's involved. They understand the magnitude of the investments and what it means to disruption. But that said, they realize that it's hard to really improve your club and your caliber of golf play without making some level of investment. So I think the time was right for all those reasons to take a fresh look.
As you mentioned, since the Ryder Cup, you guys renovated course number one. You brought in Tom Doak to do that. And then with Reese Jones, as you mentioned, course number two, you've done an incredible improvement out at your practice range with the new building that's out there, and also made other great improvements around the clubhouse and the club in general. Is this part of just a case of things going full cycle, and it was sort of time to get back? And it's now course number three's turn to get some improvements done, because it's probably been the part of the club that really hasn't had anything done for the longest period of time.
In part, to be fair, for the 19 BMW, we did do a considerable investment to redo the bunkers. But we didn't. It was more of just a renovation of the existing bunkers. We didn't really change any contours or locations or anything like that. But yeah, I think there is some truth to that. It was sort of the time to take a look at course three. And again, really, to me, the primary impetus is the fact that we were planning to do considerable capital investment that could lead to disruption. And, you know, when we marry some of these other, you know, things together, like the BMW scoring, like the reality of modern equipment and technology and what it means to courses like ours, it just seemed like time. And the member response through our strategic plan, through the survey, indicated that really it was an opportune time to take a look.
The interesting part to outsiders looking in, Michael, and maybe it doesn't seem kind of strange to anybody inside the club, but to people who follow golf course architecture a little bit, the thought was a little bit of a surprise that you've gone to the firm that you have gone to, located in Australia, headed up by 2006 U.S. Open champion Jeff Ogilvie. And I just think a lot of people here in America aren't familiar with their work. And, you know, obviously, I've already had people ask me, well, did they call Gil Hans? Did they reach out to Ben Crenshaw and Bill Corr or a couple of the other named designers that you would think would do a project like Medina 3? So take us through the process and how you got lined up with Jeff's firm, and you're going to end up working with him and his team during the Course 3 improvements that are on the calendar for a date ahead here.
It's a great question, and I really don't want to be, you know, very specific in terms of all of the firms that we did talk to. I'll come back and focus more on OCM in a moment, but I will tell you, Rory, that we cast the net quite wide with our discussions, talking to, you know, a top tier and then up and coming firms as well. And one thing that's important to understand is the work that we've commissioned with OCM at this point, Ogilvie, Cocking, and Mead, is a master planning project. There's no guarantee that the design that they come up with will be implemented at Medina. Now, we're all optimistic and hoping that that happens, but the commitment at this point in time with them is simply to produce a master plan. There's, you know, some firms that are willing to do that kind of work and other firms that maybe aren't as interested in doing that kind of work, maybe looking for more of the construction or renovation or redesign type work. And we wanted to take it in a bit more of a measured process and kind of keep our options open at this point in time. So, you know, scope decision from the club served as a way of limiting the field a bit, or getting us more focused on a certain type of a firm to work with. So once we had kind of our long list of firms identified, we actually started a formal proposal process, right? So we issued a request for proposal to five firms and received written responses from those firms. We did interviews, you know, either via, you know, the Zoom technology, or, you know, a couple were actually face-to-face with all of the requisite social distancing and all of those concerns. But then, you know, after we went from five down to two, we actually went out into the field, so to speak, and took a close look at some of their work. So we could, you know, kind of look our members in the eye and say that we've gone through an appropriate level of due diligence. And it really was a result of all of those steps in the process, the written responses, which from a couple of the firms included a conceptual design. So actually, they did a considerable amount of homework on their own nickel, so to speak, and presented a vision of what they thought Course 3 could be. Following that up with some interviews, going to see their work, and for us, OCM was really the right choice. Yes, there is a bit of concern about the fact that they're based in Australia, and that's more driven because of the limitations that we have with the pandemic than anything else. But I will tell you that their philosophy on golf course design, the fact that they bring, you know, sort of different but complementary disciplines with each of the three principals of the firm to the table, and the fact that they were very, very enthusiastic about the project. You know, that their most of their work has been done in Australia and in the East, you know, in the Far East. And this is obviously a wonderful opportunity for their firm to make a major splash in the North American market.
Michael, a lot of times when you see pictures online or sometimes TV and you see Australian courses or Far East courses, they seem to come across as a little bit more dunesy and linksy, which obviously is not what your championship course number three is. But they have done one project in America, and did either you or anybody in your group here or on your team from Medina go visit the project at Shady Oaks in Texas, where OCM has apparently wrapped up a project there during 2020?
Yes, absolutely. We would have been remiss if we didn't take the time to go down to Fort Worth and visit Shady Oaks. And they greeted us with open arms, members who served on their committee, and as well as their golf course superintendent and head golf professional. Essentially, we walked the course, right, from the first through the 18th hole, and we were armed with sort of before images of the course. I mean, for those that aren't familiar with Shady Oaks, it was the home course of Ben Hogan, who also had a hand in creating the design. You know, Shady Oaks in its original form is not reminiscent of those, you know, sandbelt Australian linksy type courses. It's more reminiscent of a classic, you know, Parkland style course. And that was really important for us to understand. And what it really confirmed is kind of what OCM was stressing with us throughout the process, is that, you know, the principles of, you know, what they call strategic golf course architecture aren't, you know, limited within, you know, sandbelt type courses. And, you know, and they walked us through, you know, what strategic golf course design meant to them, and even examples of how it could apply at Medina. So to actually have a chance to see that sort of, you know, in the grass or in the flesh out there at Shady Oaks was an important consideration for us. We really liked the enhancements that they made basically to the same routing that it was, which of course is something that we expect to see at Medina as well. You know, it's interesting, Rory. One of the considerations or the guidelines that we've established, as a club for them, is that when the work is done, we want people to understand that they're still at Medina, right? It's still going to, you know, look and feel like Medina in a very predominant way, but obviously with some enhancements and some changes.
It doesn't sound like you're looking to go linksy dunesy and or even no. Oakmont like and take out 5,000 more trees off of course number three. But Michael, look into the crystal ball a little bit and tell us what these improvements could be. More often than not these days, sometimes it's a matter of just taking out trees and adding yardage, putting in white sand, which of course the club has already done. In some cases, if you're going to host major championship golf, as the club has historically done over the years, sometimes those bunkers, they might still look the same, but they move back a little bit just to catch the longer hitters. And of course, a lot of people do hit it further these days, and or when top amateurs or top professionals visit for tournament play.
So I can give you a feel for some of the ideas, with the caveat that, you know, their work has not started in earnest. They've shared, you know, conceptual design, as I mentioned, but until they really spend considerable time on property, which probably won't be until, you know, kind of the early spring time frame, will, you know, these concepts really, you know, materialize. But that said, the first thing I would tell you is that we believe the integrity of the existing routing will remain intact. We don't expect, you know, a change in the routing of the holes or anything like that. I mean, there may be some movement of some of the green complexes, and that would be, I think, very limited in terms of nature. In terms of its nature. One thing I would definitely expect is more usage of short grass around the green complexes. If you look at course three, most of the green complexes have some symmetry to them, with back to front sloping greens, relatively small given the length of the golf course, and a bunker left and a bunker right. I think what you may end up seeing on, you know, more of the holes is some asymmetry in the green complexes and short grass used to accentuate some of the terrain that some of the greens sit on. So where instead of an errant shot or misplaced shot landing in a bunker, you may catch some terrain and roll, you know, 10, 20, 30 yards away. You know, if you're familiar with the course, the 12th hole, for example, is a good example of where short grass really plays an important strategic role in terms of how you play that hole. So I think that's one thing, asymmetry and short grass will come into play. I think the positioning of the bunkers and potentially the shapes of the bunkers will also change considerably. One of the things that was really interesting to us when they were sharing their vision for Course 3, they did some research on the history of Course 3. Of course, it's a Tom Bendelow design originally, but they also came across some intriguing information about the influence that Tillinghast may have played in a redesign in the mid-30s of Course 3. And then one of our members, Ryan Potts, actually went a step further and reached out to the Tillinghast Historical Society and found a letter that confirmed that, in fact, Tillinghast had been at Medina in the mid-1930s. Now, sadly, the actual results of his work we have not been able to locate, at least to this point in time. But when you look at some of the shots and images from a program that we've uncovered from the 1937, I think it was the Chicago Open, was one of the tournaments at that point in time. And the bunkering on the course at that point in time doesn't really bear much resemblance at all to the bunkering that we have today. You know, gigantic, you know, multi-tendril bunkers, cross bunkers were pretty predominant on the course at that point in time. So I would expect on some of the holes that OCM will, you know, kind of challenge our thinking and perspective and introduce these types of elements again. And then maybe the last thing I would tell you, or maybe two things, you know, the position of some of the tee boxes, I think will also be looked at. I don't think there's going to be a great push to add, you know, even more length to the course, but I do think they want to create a bit more variety in terms of the length that we have on the par threes, for example. Maybe the last thing I'll say is I don't expect that we're going to be eliminating trees at Medina. It's one of the characteristics that, you know, define the course. But at the same time, Rory, I wouldn't necessarily say that we're going to be planting a lot of new trees as well. So there might be some thinning in some places and rethinking, you know, some of the holes, but, you know, in the roles that the trees play. But I wouldn't expect that it's going to end up in a, you know, like an Oakmont type of a thing where they were eliminated altogether. Does that make sense?
Yes. As a matter of fact, you know, I would say that actually my next question is that, you know, now with the President's Cup coming in 26 and work being done on the course in advance, I'm sure some of that had to go through the tour with them considering bringing a major event to the club. And, you know, I know that Pinehurst, for example, they had the 2014 U.S. Open, and Tom Pashley called Mike Davis and said, we're going to do some work to number two and in advance of the U.S. Open. And they said, well, who's doing it? And he said, well, Ben and Bill. And he said, oh, we're not worried at all. And the same format kind of followed when they were going to do some things with Course 4 in advance of the U.S. Amateur. And Mike said, who's going to do it? And they said, Gil Hanse. And Mike said, I'm not worried at all. So did you guys have to kind of talk to the tour and say, hey, you know, we're considering some work on course number three, and eventually go to them and say, hey, we're going to start with OCM and maybe finish with OCM, you know, make sure that they were good with the people that were coming in to potentially make these changes in advance of the President's Cup?
Yeah, so that's a very good question and a good opportunity for me to maybe clarify some things. The first thing I would tell you is that the competition that we were in for the President's Cup and the competition that we mobilized ourselves to select our golf course architect were completely separate and distinct processes. There's no relationship between one and the other. It's a coincidence, quite frankly, that there's, you know, the President's Cup, an international event where you'd expect Australians, for example, to be competing on the international team, had no bearing on our selection with OCM. That said, we were very transparent with the PGA Tour about the fact that we were going through this master planning process. I don't think we actually informed them in terms of who the competitors were in our process, but we certainly did communicate to them that OCM was our selected firm. They were very enthusiastic about it, not only because they have familiarity and respect for the work that OCM has done in other parts of the world. But also, you can imagine that it does create a little bit of intrigue from a, if you want to say, a marketing or promotional side for the President's Cup. But I could tell you, Rory, that was not an intended consequence at all. It's just something that had to happen. Now, to the point about the timing, yes, and that's why, again, I'm being careful to say at this point what we've committed to do with a master plan, whether we decide to move forward, you know, with implementation and, you know, renovation or redesign is something that remains to be seen. We expect the master plan to be completed sometime this summer. And at that point, a part of that will be, of course, a view on timing options as well as cost to perform the project. And at that point, it's really the members that will weigh in on that. And, you know, OCM will be the first to tell you that, you know, the client here is the members of Medina, and their work will be guided at, you know, by working with the members of Medina. But obviously, since there's a tournament in 2026, we have to look in terms of what is realistic to complete before, because you want to have at least two seasons of grow-in from a completed project. So, you know, what we're going to have to look at here is, would we be able to implement 100% of the project, you know, by, you know, September of 24? Or would we do selected aspects of it that would still offer a, you know, a golf course that feels like it's holistic and integrated and not, you know, kind of two separate golf courses or having massive variations between, you know, various holes in the routing. So those are considerations that we're going to have to, you know, consider. And yes, the PGA Tour, their voice and recommendations will play a role in terms of, you know, how far we may want to go before the tournament. And in fact, we've already established that relationship and dialogue with PGA Tour. So they're well aware of what we might be doing. That's certainly very excited and on board with Medina undertaking a master plan at this point in time.
Is there, providing, you know, you can work out the details, shall we say, in 21, would work begin potentially in 22? And are you looking at potentially just losing a whole year of shutdown on course 3, or is there some sort of hope you can give your membership? And are the members saying, hey, okay, give us April, May, and June 1 year and then close it down, and then hopefully the following summer maybe we get open by July or so, and, you know, we're realistically down for 13 months, but we don't lose a full season at all?
I would tell you all of those options or more are on the table at this point in time. And I don't want to, you know, venture a guess in terms of which way it'll go at this point in time. And we don't have a preconceived idea. The most important thing at this point in time is we want to let the artists do their work on the golf course. And we want the best possible design, the strongest design to enhance course 3. And from there, we'll start to look at the various implementation options, you know, from a costing perspective, a timing perspective, a scope consideration, and we'll ask the question of what's, you know, feasible or viable to do in advance of 26. And it could be nothing, it could be limited, it could be infrastructure, it could be everything in its entirety. I guess one thing I would say, though, if you think about the way that we went about course 1 renovation and course 2 renovation, those were done in a, you know, kind of a big bang all at once type of an approach. And, you know, it's not a concept, or it's a concept that's familiar with our members. And one of the things that maybe gives us a little bit of an advantage in considering, you know, that type of a dramatic approach is the fact that we have two other golf courses that our members can still play on. Well, it remains to be seen. But again, the number one thing we want at this point is just for OCM to not, you know, enter into this with any, you know, onerous constraints and let them really produce the best possible design.
You realistically at this point don't have a start date, but you are just sort of being conscious of the time frame with the President's Cup coming. I know one local major renovation, they decided to try to get a jump on it this year because what they did is they said there was plenty of work to do around the golf course, but would not affect play. So there were still golfers out there, but yet for 6-7 weeks, there was workers on the course doing things that would not affect play. Is there some hope that part of your project here, you could do some things and your members could still play? And then, or at the same time, you could start working on one half of the golf course and at least leave maybe 9 holes open through the end of a season.
Yeah. Again, I just say the same thing. Those types of options are all on the table. You know, the good news is this is not our first rodeo with, you know, doing major work on golf courses. So we have some very experienced partners that will, you know, help. You know, we'll work with OCM. You know, I think we'll have a good plan, or, you know, even a couple of options to take to the members later this summer. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. You know, we're eagerly awaiting getting the OCM guys on property and unleashing their creative talent. The person that's been on the property is Jeff. Mm-hmm. Ogilvy, obviously, because he played in the tournament here. But what they did, Rory, is they had very detailed drone footage they used to create their conceptual designs that I referred to earlier. And the level of depth and detail that they were able to get into just from that was very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hole by hole.